welcome to Parley, the Hindu's weekly discussion podcast. I'm Prashant Virmal, your host for today. Last month, the Union Consumer Affairs Ministry came out with a list of amendments to the Consumer Protection Act and sought comments from the public. Center claims that the amendments to the Act primarily try to rein in any unfair trade practices that these e-commerce companies may be adopting. They also say that these laws will take care of the interests of consumers, but not really everyone agrees with this interpretation of the law. To discuss this matter, we have with us Anupam Manur, who is an assistant professor at the Takshashila Institution, and also Mr. Prithviraj Mukherjee, who is an assistant professor at IIM Bangalore. So welcome to both of you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Thanks, Prashant. Good to be here.
Anupam, I'll start with you. Could you provide like a general overview of your opinion on the draft rules? Also, whether you think the draft rules will actually play to the favor of consumers?
Right. I think I'm fairly critical of the these new set of rules and on multiple accounts. One is just the sheer scope of the law. If you look at the wordings carefully, they say that, you know, it's applicable to all goods and services bought or sold over digital or electronic network. And, you know, I think the predominant narrative is that this will hurt Amazon and Flipkart, but it doesn't end there, because when we look at all goods and services, it includes, you know, your food delivery apps, Uber and Ola, probably hotel booking websites, airline booking websites, etc., etc. So basically any kind of e-commerce. And that's a large kind of move to be coming from the Ministry of Consumer Affairs. And which brings me to the second point, which is all about overlapping jurisdictions. There's a lot of talk, and we can get to the specifics later, but there's a lot of talk on dominant firms, etc., which again, should be under the regulatory ambit of the Competition Commission. There are talks about data privacy, which again, there should be a Data Protection Act. And of course, the biggest part is that there's a general MSME push and a Make in India push, which if you want to do that, should come under DIPP, which is Industrial Promotion or Ministry of Commerce, right? So I think that those are the broad kind of problem areas. And to come to, you know, your specific question, I think it's largely trying to push Make in India and MSMEs, etc., under this garb or veil of consumer protection.
Prithvi, your take?
It's actually very difficult because, the whatever draft I have read is very complicated. First thing is, who is it meant for? Mm. Is it supposed to protect the consumer? Is it supposed to protect a brick and mortar store? And are the two actually aligned with each other? Does protection of A also imply the protection of B? Mm. To me, that wasn't very clear, to be honest.
You mean from the draft rules?
From the draft rules.
So you weren't, in the rules, you didn't see a clear favor of, favoring of a certain group, the consumer or the producer.
It's not clear. So what it seems like is that there is a set of regulations. I'm assuming that the intention is good. I'm assuming that the intention is to prevent one or two dominant firms from taking over not just e-commerce, but also commerce in general, right? So I'd say if you could talk about specific provisions, I can probably comment more, but it's very difficult to put this as a general yes or no at this point.
Okay, so you don't see a clear favor being done to any group as such. Okay, got it. So, yeah. So since you asked a particular thing, like when I went through the draft, there's a lot of provisions about grievance officers and a list of officers that these companies are supposed to appoint, like either in-house or whatever. So do you see that as necessary bureaucracy for this, for the whole sector to operate, or do you see this as unnecessary bureaucracy?
Okay. One thing is that you have a law. The other thing is how you uphold that law, right? I'll give you another example in a slightly different domain. For a long time, we have what is known as a do not disturb list in our mobile phone sector, right? And most of us are probably registered on that do not disturb list. Has that stopped you from getting spam? Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. So there is a law somewhere. You complain on social media, you take legal action. In fact, my service provider is sending me spam from what I know are scammers. And I am reasonably certain that these people are doing it through the service provider and don't have my number in any other way. I'm technically on a do not disturb list. If I complain to my service provider, I won't name the service provider. There are three main ones. The service provider just says, why don't you register on the do not disturb list? Now, the question is, if you were to bring this down into e-commerce, is the same thing going to happen with the grievance officer? I don't know. So how you uphold this list is also how you uphold this legislation is just as important as the legislation itself.
So you basically think that things aren't necessarily going to happen just the way they're on paper. So
we know so many instances of this, right? A bank's asking you for Aadhaar, for example. That's another classic example. You know that they're not mandated to ask you for Aadhaar, but they still do. And do you really have a place to go and air your grievance? I don't think so.
But don't you think the actually putting these things on paper, so I'm not sure whether you all this stuff on paper is actually too much bureaucracy, but just because you put things on paper, it always gives a little bit of power to the government or the officials to go after companies, right?
Yes.
So from that perspective, do you think the rules on paper are actually excessive or are they okay?
Let's go to specific rules maybe and we can talk about that.
Okay, but yeah, with the officers as such, like the grievance officers and the rules about making sure the there's a time limit to there's complaint, the officers need to get it sorted, and then the things about refunds and things like that.
So in principle, they seem okay. There might be hidden consequences that we'll discover only with time.
Yeah, I would actually go on to say that even in principle, they are unnecessary. So, I mean, again, I can see the intention behind it. But I don't see that as a problem that requires an explicit intervention by the government, right? So we've got customer, Amazon and Flipkart or any of these places have a customer care center where you can, lodge complaints and they'll take care of it by and large because there is competition and they want to, do well and get customers back to their platforms. Beyond that as well, there's a lot of other quality checks, etc. that the by and large, these marketplaces put in place as it is, right? Beyond all of that, right, there's the consumer codes. If you really, if some customer is genuinely undone by some kind of malpractice on this thing, you can move the codes, right? So there's already a lot of provisions you could try and strengthen, but I don't think, again, you need a separate kind of nodal officer or a grievance officer, etc. That just adds to the bureaucracy. We know that they're not necessarily... I mean, we know that, for example, that there's not enough state capacity as Prithviraj was talking about, right? That you for implementing some of these things. And so if you start a law knowing that you can't implement it, I think it's doomed for failure. So you rather not do it at all if it's going to cause more harm than good.
I guess also companies like Amazon, I think they've been giving refunds, pretty easy refunds, even before any of these laws came in, I guess.
Exactly. So you need to look at necessity and then proportionality. And I think this current set of laws probably doesn't pass both those tests, right? It's not necessary to the extent, and definitely it's disproportionate to the scale of the problem.
So I guess what you see is the market itself coming up with some form of self-regulation or soft regulation.
That gets a bad name, right? When you say market regulates itself, people will suddenly... But that's the way it has been functioning, right?
Okay, yeah, that's why I actually bought the example of Amazon actually giving out pretty easy refunds even before any law actually mandated those.
Exactly.
I'll just add one point here.
Yeah,
we're cherry-picking Amazon because it's the biggest player in the market, right? So we started this discussion by saying that the scope of this is far beyond Amazon.
For the e-commerce sectors in general.
So how do you define e-commerce is again pretty... Is it e-commerce if I go to the Big Bazaar website and buy something and then pick it up at the store?
Yeah.
I don't know. It is.
According to these rules, Prithvi, that would be e-commerce as well, because again, all goods and services bought or sold over digital or electronic networks. So I'm guessing if you're making the payment online, it is just muddy, right? There's no clarity on any of these things, but that specific example, I would imagine that it would come under these rules.
Okay, let me give you another example. I go to Big Bazaar and then pay on Paytm with a specific Paytm discount that they're having. I don't know if that qualifies as e-commerce or not, to be honest.
Yeah, so that's where it gets really muddy.
Okay, yeah. Prithvi, another question is, do you see any kind of protectionism in this? Like, I think there's also a provision about like country of origin or whatever imports. Oh. And also there's one thing about... that these platforms should actually favor domestic goods over foreign goods. Isn't that like clear protectionism?
Okay. So first of all, I think you're using protectionism as a bad word. That's not clear to me. Every country has its form of protectionism. In fact, the moment you charge an import duty, it is implicitly protecting your own people against some other country's importers. Right. That said, what we know is that a big company, and I'll specifically give you examples outside e-commerce later, will always find a way to subvert quite a few laws. So let me give you the example of a ban on tobacco advertising. Did that stop India's largest tobacco company from sponsoring a World Cup or the Indian cricket team? No. They just found another way, right? Surrogate advertising. In this case, do you think that one of the world's largest I'll cherry pick a company, but one of the largest companies in the world already has what it calls its subsidiary, right? Indian subsidiary, which has a separate name. I'm not going to take names, but for all practical purposes, you know that the separate name is actually just a front for a larger foreign company. Point one, that's going to happen. Point two, it's very difficult today to say what the country of origin of something is. Is right. A Xiaomi phone manufactured in India. Is that an Indian phone or is that a Chinese phone? I don't know. A Samsung phone manufactured in Vietnam and sold in India. What is its country of origin? I don't know, to be honest. These questions are still going to come up. So at the end of the day, I think it is checking boxes. There is no. The spirit of the rule will never be implemented. What will happen is that companies will find increasingly creative ways of subverting the letter of the law.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. So there's a bit of conflation of issues here, right? Because there's, on one hand, there is what I think Prithvi is talking about is vertical integration. That is your, let's say, e-commerce marketplace also doing retail. So marketplace acting as a retail, this thing as well, right? Yes, there are problems with that. There's violation of what you would call as platform neutrality. And however, it comes down to the fact that A, this is in the jurisdiction or should be in the jurisdiction of Competition Commission, or at best, it could also be under the Commerce Ministry. It has got nothing to do with what, you know, consumer protection. So it's in the wrong place. Again, and remember, they've been trying to do this inventory model. They've been trying to attack this inventory model from multiple places, right? One is, you know, the entire FDI rules. They've been on from Commerce Ministry, etc. So they've been trying to attack it from multiple places. And now they try to push this through the consumer protection angle as well. So, but that just doesn't make sense. The second part is that on the country of origin, which is different from your, you know, your vertical integration problem. So your country of origin, again, there's extremely, and I'm not afraid to call this out, but I think it is extremely stupid. One is you got to state what is the country of origin. That's the requirement. Now, fair enough. I mean, probably that is something that we can debate. But the fact that they're asked to provide a domestic alternative at the same time, I think that's not level playing field. I don't see any kind of economic reasoning why a commerce marketplace has to, you know, push for a domestic alternative. That's not its job, and that's not what it wants to do. I mean, if the domestic alternative is really that good, then they can compete. I mean, and people will choose that as they, you know, as they would, based on the economics of it, or based on the quality of the products, or et cetera, right? Or based on the price. So trying to push this, and I will say that this is protectionism, and I do use that derogatorily, you know, and pejoratively, because this is protectionism. This particular thing that, you know, your marketplaces are supposed to provide a domestic alternative is, for me, it reeks of protectionism. And I use that derogatorily.
Arpa, what do you think of the consequences of a particular things like the bill bans flash sales, and also bans like talks about fallback liabilities? Of, you could look talk about the unintended consequences. Obviously, the bills. I mean, the government would say that the intent is to protect consumers, but what are the unintended consequences that you see?
Yeah. So I mean, again, we can on the flash sales bit, I don't even see how that is supposed to help consumers. I mean, in my understanding, and it could be primitive, it could be wrong, but on any general understanding, you would think that flash sales will help consumers, right? I mean, you're getting a discount for at a limited period of time. And so people who can take advantage of that will get benefited from that. So I don't see why curbing or banning flash sales are supposed to help consumers, right? And second bit is just, again, the wording of it. It's just so wrong, and it's all over the place. So they've said, you know, things like significant reduction in price or a high discount. What do you mean by significant reduced price, right? Is 20% significant on an iPhone? Maybe to you it is, maybe to me it's not. I want a 50%, etc., right? So again, the wording is just wrong on multiple levels, and it's just open to different interpretations, which will mean that, again, as Prithvi was saying, these big companies are experts at, you know, arbitrage. So they will find a way to negotiate and navigate through these things. What are the unintended consequences? Who do you think will not be able to navigate through these laws and have a team of lawyers who can help them? It will be the relatively smaller sellers, smaller e-commerce platforms, etc. So what you're doing, in fact, is the opposite of what you wanted to achieve, which is help out your small sellers and so on, right? So for me, that is the first thing that will happen, right? It'll discourage even the fallback liability, for example. Having a nodal officer, I would imagine, will be probably one of the highest paid jobs in that company, because you're holding a person who's going to be liable. It's not going to be an easy job. I mean, we've seen with what happened with Twitter with the same set of kind of laws, right? So that's, I think it's going to just increase costs for e-commerce. I think the bigger players can somehow manage or navigate their way through it. The smaller players are the ones who will get hurt, which is the opposite effect of what you want to achieve. Fallback liability, again, it just makes no economic sense. It displays a brazen misunderstanding of what marketplaces are supposed to be, right? Because, you know, it's like, you know, a Kirana store selling, let's say, washing powder, and you find that problematic, right? Or whatever, there's a defect in manufacturing, and you hold the Kirana store liable. That makes, again, no sense. That's not how marketplaces work, right? So I think, again, it betrays a lack of understanding of what marketplaces are supposed to be. And this will hurt the industry in the larger sense, right? Basically, all your online sites, I think it's going to just increase the costs on a lot of these things, because there can be court cases there, which means you'll have to lawyer up and so on and so forth.
Prithvi, do you have something to add?
Yeah. So on flash sales, I agree with Anupam. Like, I don't particularly see. So if I were a brand and I were doing flash sales, I think it's a terrible idea for the brand, but that should not be a regulator's concern.
Yeah.
It devalues your brand. it's the brand's concern. But I will say something about deep discounting. Now, the law does not really specify much about what exactly constitutes a deep discount. But let's go a little bit into the history of why they may have done this. So, if you go to America, for example, you know, there are some big players with big pockets who did what is known as loss leader pricing. So, this was, let's say Walmart, for example. So, Walmart, for example, would go into a small town America and set up business. One thing that they would then do is set up a pharmacy. Just one example of what a loss leader pricing would look like. And in America, you know, medicines are very expensive. So Walmart would say, for 1 month, you bring your prescriptions, we'll give you free medicines. Now, what's going to happen is that the small pharmacies cannot match that. They go out of business. But since you have gone to Walmart, which is outside the city, you're going to do other shopping as well. Right? Which means in turn, the grocery stores also now lose out on business, and Walmart gives you low prices there as well. If you look at the American retail space, the small-time retailers essentially went out of business. Now, let's go to another context, France. So, France realized that this sort of deep discounting can create problems. So, what they mandated is that you cannot sell anything cheaper than the price you have bought it for. So, you have to actually talk about your procurement price, and there are only two, and these are called sale seasons. There are only two approved sale seasons a year when you can get rid of excess inventory by going lower than your cost price. And in France, it's very popular, those two seasons. People go and buy a lot of things at discounts. But other than that, you can discount, but essentially you cannot go below your cost price. The idea is to prevent a Walmart-like situation. In this case, so in principle, I think having a law against excessive deep discounting, I am not against it. So if you go and look at Paris versus New York, the retail space is there, you will see that there is a huge difference. Maybe not that much New York, because New York is not typical of America in that sense. But if you were to go to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you are not going to find too many small retailers there. You will, however, find a big Walmart outside, which does a bulk of the business.
Do you think that actually like this favors the consumers?
I think so. So over the long run, what will happen is that you won't be dependent on one guy. So is it consumers, or are you preferring, or are you trying to favor the small retailer? This is a question that I cannot answer straight away. But in India at the moment, we are not seeing, we are not close to a Walmart-like situation. Or if you want to say an Amazon-like situation either, right? So Amazon in the US, for example, has put Barnes & Noble out of business. Barnes & Noble in turn, a few years ago, maybe 20 years ago, put the mom-and-pop booksellers out of business. In India, we are not close to that situation, but I can see the intent behind such a law. But again, what is a deep discount? In France, it is very clearly defined what it is. You cannot go below cost price. In this case, it's not clear what it is, as Anupam said, right? A 20% discount may not go below cost price, for example. So I can see the principle behind this. The law wording itself, it's not very clear to me what a deep discount means.
Anupam, if you have a response, or we can go to the next question.
Yeah, no, just very quickly, I think retail density in India is amazingly good compared to many other countries in the world, right? So again, comes back to the question of necessity. Do we need this law in this fashion at this moment? The answer is no. Given, again, you have to do a cost-benefit analysis, right? The kind of harm that it can potentially do versus the potential benefits that they imagine, I don't think it adds up. I think the harm is higher at this point. So India's retail density is really good. There is a lot of competition among the retailers. E-commerce still is a relatively smaller amount over overall retail. So given all of these situations, I don't see a need for this law just yet. And I don't think it is, again, forward-looking and that it's anticipating a problem and therefore it's in, you know, a solution to a future problem as well.
Okay, so if that's the case, like, what do you see as the reason these laws have been made? Like, obviously the government says that the reason is to protect consumers, but there's always something else in case there is something to this case as well.
I mean, now we'll be going into speculative territory, which is slightly unsafe. But by I think most people's reading, it is just to help. I mean, again, you can take a cynical political view, which in all probability might be correct. But you know, we have to go into the voter base, who votes for the current party, the merchants, and
if there's a case there, you can make that.
I think, that's, again, but that's speculation, right? I have to state that. I have no evidence to prove that's the case because you can't understand motives, you know.
Whatever you've seen in other cases, like in other examples of what's happened in other countries, who have been the interests that have wanted a certain kind of law, how is it?
I think even before going to other countries, I think you can look at an overall policy approach taken by, let's say, this government over the last few years. And for me, that whether it is on payments, you know, the whole MasterCard thing, whether it's Twitter and Coup, whether it's something else, you know, if you look at it from a holistic perspective, that tells me that they in some way they want to encourage this whole Make in India thing, because that's one of their flagship schemes, and they're trying to do, you know, put in any kind of rules to promote that, and not realizing the kind of harm it can do in the long run, even for the domestic Indian firms. And I can, you know, talk about that later. But according to me, you know, if you just look at that holistic kind of thing, a series of steps in different domains, from increasing import tariffs on various products, encouraging this domestic manufacturing, whether it's a social media app, banning TikTok, you look at it from a holistic perspective, it tells me that they have they want to kind of promote domestic industries.
Okay, Prithvi, do you see any underlyings to this bill, or is it just the stated intent?
See, okay, again, very difficult to impute motives. But even if you were to impute motives, I don't think vote bank politics comes here. To be very honest, I don't think anybody is going to think of, oh, this guy banned Chinese imports, so I'm going to vote for him. Could there be lobbies? Yes. Do I have suspicions who those lobbies are? Yes. Am I willing to share them? No.
So what could be the reason?
No, as I said, I do have speculations. I'm not willing to come on record and share what those speculations are.
that's probably wise, Prithvi.
I want to talk about like all these rules about protecting consumers and things like that. So there's also the risk of regulatory capture as well, right? I think it's kind of similar to the previous question, but if you can just shed light on the, even just the theory, you don't have to name sources or anything. Yeah. The risk of that. Any of you? Yeah.
Okay. No, so I mean, with in India, this, and speaking very generic, whenever there is extremely complicated set of rules, you will open up the chance for this kind of regulatory capture. And here, you know, again, whether it is, go back to that FDI rules on, again, e-commerce, you have a sinking feeling as to why that was done, right? And there was some form of regulatory capture there. There's regulatory capture that happens all over the place. So knowing that, if you're doing this deliberately, then again, it probably that is the intended outcome. Again, bold statement, probably speculative, but that's what I'm going with.
Prithvi?
Yeah, I don't have a comment here.
Okay, but you even another aspect of these too many laws. I mean, I think even Anupam talked about in the first place while he answered the first question about overlapping jurisdictions between the different, both CCI, consumer affairs and stuff. So do you see that? Like, how exactly do you see conflict between these agencies playing out?
So, that's highly possible. My entire concern is that these laws are going to be made and will be, and as I said, I still get spam on my phone, despite there is some law somewhere about do not disturb. I do not see these laws being, see, the more laws you have, the harder they are to uphold also, right? Jurisdiction becomes an issue, it becomes complicated, etc. I'm going to go with a cynical view that a lot of these are not just going to be upheld at all. These have been done for the sake of doing, and maybe that's about it.
Do you agree, Anupam?
Yeah, I mean, so CCI themselves actually have put out a statement saying you need a more calibrated and a measured approach towards some of these things in response to the set of rules. So that should give you an inkling about the potential kind of conflicts that can arise, because you have one set of rules coming from, let's say, Consumer Ministry, and another set of rules coming from a Competition Commission, and yet another from Department of Industrial Promotion. That's bound to create ambiguity, which will create higher transaction costs, more loopholes for people to go through, a whole bunch of unintended consequences. So on that, you should be careful. There's another way to look at this. One is, of course, that a lot of it will actually not take effect, or some of it will take effect just enough to create a lot of hazard and increase transaction costs for the companies. But the other way to probably look at it is that they've deliberately created this extreme set of rules put out for draft consultation such that a milder version will get passed. Maybe they're toying with that idea. I'm not sure, but again, that's speculation. What it will lead to is policy uncertainty. I think that's, there's no two words about that. They lead to policy uncertainty and ambiguity, which will hurt the players across the board. I mean, all sorts of industries will get hurt because of that, which is not good news at all. At a time when, you have decreasing investments in overall in India, if you look at capital formation over the last 10 years and so on, it's dropped 10 percentage points. Right now, FDI is not really forthcoming. There's a whole bunch of things happening. The pandemic has hit, jobs are lost, etc. At this point of time, you really got to ask yourself, is this your top priority? Is this something that you should be doing, which can further, at least potentially, hurt investment and hurt job creation? I don't think so. I think that's why it is all the more bizarre that they've come up with these set of rules now.
Okay. So last question is, let's say you're a policymaker and you want to help consumers as the intended, the intent of this law. Like, how would you actually help consumers, like in terms as a policymaker, what kind of laws would you have? What would you change about the current system?
Okay, I'm not an expert on this, to be honest. So there is some sort of, I think, a principle that come. There are two principles that come from two different stakeholder perspectives. One is consumers should not be cheated. So any law that deals with deceptive advertising or essentially, any law that deals with penalties for deceptive advertising, leaking of data, spamming is in principle, I think, desirable. The second is laws... If you see that there is some sort of a monopolist coming in the picture, across the world, even the most capitalist economies will take action on that. The other thing I think, I don't know if it probably doesn't come under the ambit of this, you have a large number of gig workers in the e-commerce sector. I think their needs somehow, somewhere need to be addressed. We do hear horror stories of delivery boys not being overworked or not getting enough rest time, etc. And almost every big e-commerce player can be potentially named in this. So maybe, but that's probably not in the ambit of this law at all. So I won't go there.
So you don't see the current laws actually addressing these issues?
It doesn't address the issue of gig workers' rights, for example, right?
Anupam, I have the same question to you as well. Like, how exactly, what would you do to actually benefit consumers?
Yeah, I would approach this problem by first asking, you know, the basic question. Before any form of government intervention, I would ask, what is the market failure that you're trying to address? And you scratch the surface and, you know, you keep digging and you find that there is actually no market failure that this particular set of rules are trying to address, right? There's one set of market failure, which is that there is concentration of market power, which, again, Prithvi alluded to. So that is, I think, a genuine concern, requires some form of intervention for sure, but not through the consumer protection rules, right? You have, again, I'm probably now repeating myself like a parrot, but you have an entire body dedicated to doing this, which is called the Competition Commission. So you don't need to address it through these set of rules. Second set of rules, I mean, probable market failure could be information asymmetry. But, you know, the whole point of the e-commerce marketplace is to reduce, to large extent, reduce information asymmetry as well, right? The fact that you can compare different products, the fact that there's a rating and review system, that customers actually help out each other, you know, the network effects come into play. So that is by and large taken care of. If you need to do something beyond that, you can set standards. So you set standards as to saying, okay, whether it's the ISO marking, etc., all of these are different ways in which the government actually tries to reduce information asymmetry. You carry on with that, right? There's no problem. Now, beyond that, if there is people who are being cheated through the system, I think that's where, again, you have a consumer court, so which will help. So you can tidy up that process, reduce pendency, increase accessibility, increase even education on the fact that there are consumer courts, you can move and so on, right? But beyond all of that, I will say that, again, look at our any standard shopping experience. You go out, you buy something, it may be good, it may be bad, you know, you either have made a good decision or a bad decision based on the information you have. So again, increase information, but based on that you make a rational thing. But not all of our purchases are top notch. Sometimes you can buy things which are substandard. So you either live with that and learn from that experience and buy better next time, or yeah, if you're deeply hurt and it's a really expensive buy, move the courts. Consumers already have these options available to them, right? So this happens in all our purchases. You might go and eat a masala dosa and it might not be the best dosa you've had. But what are you going to do, right? Are you going to hold this thing? It's just so, I think you're over-regulating here for a problem that doesn't exist to the extent that they think it exists. So that's my main problem, right? That's my main contention, that for a lot, you're trying to solve a problem which probably doesn't exist in the same magnitude. So therefore, you need to relook at this. Or I will put, again, a cynical twist to it. A lot of the consumer protection rules that they've come up with for the e-commerce retailers should apply equally to brick and mortar stores. Right. So if you're willing to do that, which again, it will not work and it's a nightmare to deal with, but there's no reason why it should not apply to brick and mortar stores, by the way, whether it's flash sales, liability, fallback liability, whether it's misleading advertising, all of those things, by the way, can be equally applicable to brick and mortar stores. The fact that they're going after e-commerce should tell you that the entire motivation is different.
Okay, and there's also the question of whether the government actually has the capacity to implement all these laws.
Of course they don't.
No, the worst part is actually they start building the capacity to do it. That would be even worse.
Okay. Why do you say that?
Well, it's your taxes going into it.
Okay.
If you set up another bureaucracy just to take care of this, that means, so over-regulation is one thing, and I agree, so essential idea is that retailers should all be on the same footing. That is a principle that we should. So whether it's e-commerce or non-e-commerce. And over-regulation is by definition overkill. Beyond some basic protections, I don't think we should be looking at the regulations.
Yeah, I think you've earlier made the point about whether these laws will actually remain on paper or whether they'll actually be implemented, right? So So let's say India actually gets the capacity to implement these laws. From that perspective, do you think these laws will be, if they're actually implemented, will they be good?
That's a very big if. That's a very big if. I can give you, to be very honest, even consumer protection. So Anupam is a big favor, is a big fan of consumer courts. How many of us have actually gone to consumer courts? We have all been cheated, I'm sure.
Yeah, but which means that, you know, the cost-benefit analysis doesn't add up. So
Exactly. So we don't have enough protections, and the company also knows that. So there are many times I've been cheated, big levels, small levels, different levels. There are many. I don't even know how to go to the consumer court.
Yeah, so at best, what I'm saying is strengthen your existing systems before adding another layer which you can't implement.
Yeah, absolutely.